Ave, and welcome to Emperors of Rome, a Roman history podcast from La Trobe University. I'm your host, Matt Smith, and with me today is Dr. Gillian Shepherd, Director of the Trandall Centre at La Trobe University. This is episode CLXXI, Crucifixion. Crucifixion was a Roman practice of torture and execution that proved a popular punishment for slaves and enemies of Rome. When crucified, a person was nailed to a cross or a piece of wood and left in the elements to asphyxiate. Now, a warning before we start, this is interesting, but obviously not a happy topic for a podcast. Here's Gillian Shepherd.
Crucifixion is a most gruesome, slow, agonizing form of death. Now, we tend to think of it as fairly specifically somebody nailed to a cross, and that perhaps comes out of the Christian image of crucifixion. But in fact, in antiquity, it's a more general term, and it could be applied to a human being nailed or perhaps just tied or bound in some way to a cross-shaped piece of wood or a stake or an X-shaped piece of wood or a plank, anything that would result in death ultimately from suspension and exposure and possibly some accompanying torture as well.
Okay.
So it's quite a broader term perhaps than we tend to think of it today, although certainly that image of the actual cross is still a very important, prominent part of crucifixion in antiquity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a strong association with that now. So this was a very popular form of punishment for people who had done wrong. It was usually reserved for the worst and the lowest, if I can put it that way, or the enemy.
Certainly the lowest, yes. Whether or not they were the worst could be more complicated because these people hadn't necessarily committed any heinous crime, at least not by our standards. But it would not be carried out normally on anybody who was, for example, a Roman citizen. Now, there are some exceptions to that in history, but it was used extensively for slaves. It was fairly standard for foreign enemies, for perhaps deserters even in an army, applied to Christians a lot too, non-Romans and the lower classes essentially as well.
Okay. Was it always a lethal intention / practice to crucify somebody?
It doesn't seem to have been. There are hints in our sources that originally it was more a form of punishment that didn't necessarily result in death. In other words, you would be attached to what in Latin seems to be the patibulum, a wooden bar that you would be tied to, and you might be paraded through the streets, you might be flogged a bit, but that would be the form of punishment. But then it becomes being attached to some kind of stake and being left there until you die.
Mm.
Now, it is possible to survive crucifixion for some time, and that is part of that hideous process of it.
By design.
It is such a long, agonizing death. And there are ways of prolonging it, and there are ways of speeding it up as well. And the Romans were pretty good at all of that sort of stuff. But by the time we're looking at crucifixion as a widely used form of punishment, yes, it is execution.
So can we discuss etymology now? What was the origin of the word crucifixion? And were Romans using vaguely that term when they were talking about it?
Yes, or its cognates, if you like. So a lot of our words for crucifixion actually relate to later ecclesiastical Latin.
Mm.
And if you go back to the Latin of the pagan period, you've got a range of words that essentially mean crucifixion, but can have a broader meaning as well. So obviously it's connected to the crux, the cross, and it's related to the idea of crucifigo, to fix to a cross, to bind to a cross. And we get cognates of that. For example, the cruciarius, which is an adjective, something pertaining to the cross, but it can mean torture more generally as well, because crucifixion involves an element of sort of separate torture, if you like, often. So it has perhaps wider meanings that I guess get narrowed, particularly in later periods and particularly after the use of the word in particularly Christian contexts.
Okay. And as we say, it covered many forms of different crucifixions. So you've got trees and stakes and what have you.
Yes. Now, there's some sense you could simply be suspended in some way from a stake, or you could have the crossbeam as well, the patibulum, which would give you that, what we think of as the actual cross. There seem to have been a few added extras. For example, Seneca, when he's writing to Marcia and he's consoling Marcia on the death of her son, refers to all sorts of crosses. He says not just of one kind, but made in different ways. Some have their victims with head down to the ground. Some impale their private parts. Others stretch out their arms on the gibbet. So that later one is, I guess, the sort of thing we're thinking of as a cross.
Mm.
But the reference to perhaps impaling the private parts might be referring to something known as the sedile, which is a sort of a peg, perhaps, that might have supported the buttocks. It's also referred to as a cornu, a horn. So there's a sense it could be sharp. In other words, it would be increasing.
I'm clenching.
Yep. It's not comfy. Not comfy.
they're very creative. This wasn't just a Roman practice, was it? Were they the originators of this idea broadly? They refined it, I suppose, and made it a common thing by the sounds of it. But it's not exclusively Roman, is it?
No, it's not. It's got a much, much longer history than that. There's some evidence that the Persians used it, and the Greeks might have got the idea from the Persians. And we have versions of crucifixion from ancient Greece. So, for example, a famous account is Herodotus in his account of the Persian Wars in the 5th century BCE, and he refers to the crucifixion of a Persian, Artaxerxes. He says that this Persian was nailed to boards, was hanged there, and that his son was stoned to death in front of his father's eyes. So his father is dying this agonizing death and the son is being stoned. And this idea actually of this agonizing death, we're witnessing other things happening, is part of the Roman idea too often, that this prolonged torture. So we actually have some archaeological evidence of this practice from ancient Attica, so the area of Athens. And it is what we think is referred to in our sources as apotupanismos. Now, this is a form of punishment which appeared to be a bit obscure. The word derives from tympanon, which means a cudgel. Think of our tympanon drum, the idea of beating something.
Mm.
The assumption was that meant that criminals would be beaten to death. But then an archaeological discovery was made in the area of Phaleron, which is just around Athens, of a bunch of skeletons in a pit. Now, that's an unusual way to bury the dead, so there's got to be some special explanation for that. And these corpses were laid out rigidly straight. And then on closer examination, it was clear that they were shackled at the hands and the ankles. And the reason they were so straight is because they appear to have been shackled to boards, sort of stapled to pieces of wood.
Yeah.
And the wood had long since decayed, but you still had the skeletons and the shackles in this position. Now, a tympanum can also mean a board. So that might be what this apotympanismos business actually is. It's a variation on what we think of as crucifixion.
Mm.
It's being shackled to this board. So again, it's a form of prolonged agonizing exposure that leads to death.
We don't often find evidence of this sort of punishment, do we? I guess because the Romans were big into crucifixion to start with, and these are the lower classes or the people who have been horribly punished. Why would you not just cremate them and be done with it?
We don't have much evidence of crucifixion at all archaeologically, and that's really not surprising. Part of the punishment, part of capital punishment, was what happened to the body afterwards. That idea of post-mortem bad treatment of the body is very prominent in Roman law. So we would not necessarily expect the victims of crucifixion to be buried in any formal way at all. And it's perfectly likely, in fact, that they just remain stuck up there on the cross until their bodies completely disintegrated, were picked apart by vultures, whatever. And that was part of the indignity of the punishment. And, of course, they're on a piece of wood, they might be tied to it, all that's going to be perishable. They might have been nailed to it, but probably the Romans, being practical, might have recycled those nails for use on another occasion. And the bodies would just be left there, or perhaps at best chucked in one of the pits that have been found in certain areas. For example, outside the Esquiline Gate in Rome, there are huge pits that were obviously used for the disposal of all sorts of waste, including human bodies, particularly during the Republic. So it's unsurprising that we really don't find that physical evidence of this practice. There is a little bit, though, and perhaps the best example of it comes from a discovery that was made in Jerusalem some years ago, which appears to show the actual process of crucifixion. And this was in a tomb that was discovered as part of a big Jewish cemetery, essentially, that perhaps dated primarily to the first century CE, though it was in use for much longer than that. It was a cemetery that contained typical graves cut into the limestone, into the bedrock. And in one of these was found an ossuary, in other words, a stone box with bones that were gathered up into it. And that was a fairly standard practice. But the interesting thing about these bones, and they were the bones of a youngish adult male, there was a heel bone that had a nail through it. That's very unusual. And there were also fragments of wood attached to this as well. That looks like pretty clear evidence of crucifixion. And in fact, a bit more examination of the bones indicated that certainly the right tibia had been fractured with a violent blow. And that's something we hear about too in our accounts of crucifixion. You could break the legs of the individual being crucified, and that would in fact speed up the process. That was something that was, in some accounts, deemed to be almost merciful because it meant that the victim had really no way of being supported on the cross, so it would simply slump and would asphyxiate much faster. Now, what's also interesting about this particular burial is it's in what appears to be quite an elite family tomb. This appears to have been an individual who was, or his family was given the right to remove him from the cross and give him a normal, decent burial. I mean, we're in Judea here. That might have been specific conditions that applied to crucifixion in Judea, but we suspect not elsewhere in the Roman Empire.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like the norm. I know somebody who was crucified for a very particular reason.
Yes, and since it seems to be an elite burial, one imagines perhaps a political crime. We'll never know. The ossuary had a name on it, Jehohanan, the son of Hagakol. So we can presumably identify this person, but we don't know much more.
Okay, so what do we know then about the process of crucifixion? How is it carried out? And what do our sources tell us? Let's kind of wade into the nitty-gritty yucky about how you'd go about crucifying someone.
Well, yeah, it is really, really yucky.
Yeah, actually. Yeah. Disclaimer.
Yeah, it is the most appalling way of dying. We don't get any very clear description of this process in our sources. And again, that's not really very surprising because this is a gruesome form of punishment for the lower classes. So describing that process in detail is not something our elite Roman authors are ever likely to do for us.
Yeah, but I am surprised that, you know, somebody like Pliny the Elder, who talked about everything, didn't talk about this, or that there isn't some text somewhere, or Seneca mused about it, or, you know, something like that.
Well, we get bits and pieces.
Yeah.
But I think part of it might have been that it really was a commonplace and it was well understood. It's carried out with regularity, sometimes on a mass scale. Perhaps it was something that people were well aware of.
So who could do a crucifixion? Was it very much an even, this is done by the state only?
No, you could do it yourself to your own slaves if you wanted to.
Legally?
Legally, yes.
Wow.
You had the power of life and death
over
your slaves.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that comes through pretty clearly in one of the best documents we have regarding crucifixion, and that's something known as the Lex Puteolana. a fragmentary marble tablet from modern Pozzuoli, so ancient Puteoli, so in Campania in Italy. We're outside Rome here. And it probably dates to the first century CE, so around the time when Jesus Christ was being crucified, for example. Now, it deals with all sorts of regulations regarding undertakers, funerals, burials, but also executions. It spells out what one can do if one wants to privately execute a slave, male or female. Now, that's interesting because we don't have a lot of evidence for the crucifixion of females. But if you don't want to do it yourself, you can pay a contractor to do it instead.
Wow.
And it sets out what the contractor must do, but it also specifies that the contractor will do it in the manner requested. Mm-hmm. In other words, that suggests that the owner of the slaves can design, if you like, the execution themselves and perhaps the torture that goes along with that. And it sets out what the executioner is to be paid and the equipment they've got to bring along and so forth. So, yes, as a private individual, you could do that to your slaves.
It sounds like a very kind of almost a specialized career. But considering that we've got accounts of Romans throwing their slaves to the lampreys and all sorts of those things, it doesn't entirely surprise me that you can crucify a slave if you wanted to.
Mm, you can. You can. You have the right of life and death of your slaves.
What about as a more formalized punishment from the state, though?
Yes, absolutely. It could be decreed by a magistrate. Again, there would be professionals carrying this out. In that case, it seems to have involved torture, scourging initially. Again, we just get passing references to this. In fact, some of our most important sources are the Gospels. The four Gospels describe the crucifixion of Christ, and they give us not much detail, but at least some detail. How we interpret that can be a bit more complicated. But we see there something we get in other sources as well, and that is the scourging, the ritual humiliation, then the procedure, if you like, where the patibulum is attached to the victim. They are taken to the place of execution. That might be in Rome, for example, somewhere outside the Esquiline Gate. There seem to have been places for execution there. They would be attached to this vertical stake, so creating a cross, and then simply left there. Now, we get a sense also in our sources that they were guarded as well to make sure nobody removed the body.
Makes sense, yeah.
And that's something, again, we hear about the Gospels, the soldiers are there, but we get hints of it also. For example, Petronius in the Satyricon tells a brilliant story of a woman in Ephesus whose husband died. And she was grieving him and she was renowned for her devotion to her husband and her chastity. And she was mourning at this tomb. And just nearby, some robbers were being crucified. And one of the soldiers who was guarding these crucified robbers was wondering what was going on by this tomb. You know, this widow who was there, and he sort of went and chatted her up basically and won her over, and they decided they'd have some private time together in the tomb.
What?
Yep. Yep, and then they closed the vault of the tomb so they wouldn't be interrupted. And they spent, I think, what was about 3 days getting up to this. And when they kind of came out again, they realised that the parents of one of the crucified individuals had come and taken the body down from the cross to give it a proper burial, at which point the soldier gets really nervous that he's going to get into big trouble for this.
And that's going to get him in trouble.
Seriously punished, seriously punished. And the widow announces that, well, really, she can't bear to see a good man like him who's alive go to waste. Better to put a dead man to use. And she instructs that her dead husband is taken out of his tomb and nailed up on the cross instead as a sort of a substitute bodies.
So wow.
Hopefully nobody would notice. Now, I don't think we have to necessarily believe this story in all its details. But the point of soldiers guarding the crucifixions to make sure that the punishment process is not interfered with or interrupted in any way. That is quite possible.
Wow, a lot happened in that answer to that question. Okay, was the process of a cross or a beam being carried by the punished, like being paraded through the city, was that a thing as punishment and humiliation?
Yes, that seems to have been part of the whole humiliation process and an important part of it, that it was incredibly public and humiliating. And the condemned person would also have perhaps attached around their neck or somebody carrying a titulus, which would have their name and their crime. So it was probably quite a public spectacle.
A day out.
Yes, you'd see these people being paraded through the streets. They might be completely naked. They would have been scourged, so they're seriously injured already.
And another part of this being very public and part of it being the humiliation is that the executions take place in a very visible space, I imagine. So we're talking about arenas. We're talking about Esquiline Gate, so just outside the city, but not within the city because that's kind of a sacred area.
Yes, you couldn't execute people in that manner in the city. And in a sense, that detachment from the city is also part of the punishment. You're being removed from the civic community. You're being thrown out of the city. Almost. Very public places, roadsides, of course, outside the gates. So perhaps the most famous example of mass crucifixion is the case of the crucifixion of 6,000 followers of Spartacus, who was, of course, the rebel slave that led a huge army of slaves in the Third Servile War. They were crucified by the victorious general Crassus in 71 BCE. And Crassus crucified them along the Appian Way. So apparently from the length from Rome to Capua. Now that's about 200 kilometres.
Yeah.
So imagine that hideous, gruesome sight of crucifixion after crucifixion after crucifixion. Also the visual contrast between these individuals who are given this appalling form of death and no proper burial against the background of the Appian Way, which is a cemetery, because, of course, there are burials outside Rome lining the Appian Way.
Mm.
So just in behind these crucified individuals, there are the monuments of respectable Romans who have been buried decently and are commemorated. So there's that really strong visual contrast as well.
So as part of all of this being very public, we know about people being executed in the arena. So were crucifixions part of the punishments that you could see in an amphitheatre?
Yes, as far as we can tell, you could. Now, again, we don't have a huge amount of evidence for that, other than we know that one of the things on the playlist, if you like, of games and entertainments at the amphitheatre would have been executions of the noxi, the criminals, those who are condemned to death. And there was a whole range of doing that.
Mm.
But one of our best pieces of evidence that that could involve crucifixion actually comes from an advertisement for a set of games that's been found at Pompeii. It's an edictum munerus, a show announcement. It was painted on the outside of a couple of tombs, tombs 30 and 31 by the Nuceria Gate in Pompeii. So we're looking perhaps here at about the mid-first century CE. And this is done by a professional sign writer, and it advertises an event that's going to take place at Cumae, which is just up the road on the other side of the Bay of Naples, where there will be 20 gladiatorial pairs and their substitutes. They're going to fight on October the 1st, the 5th, and the 6th, and the 7th. There will be a fight with wild beasts. There will be a velarium, an awning, so that will provide shade for the spectators. But there will also be cruciari, individuals to be crucified.
Mm.
So there we seem to have a clear indication of what's going to happen and how these individuals are actually going to be executed. Now, how it was actually carried out and whether it involved something a bit more elaborate, I think is a good question, because crucifixion, if we put ourselves or try to put ourselves in the shoes of a Roman who is going along to be entertained, crucifixion is a slow process.
Yeah.
And it would get kind of boring after a while.
So you're thinking like a bit of window dressing off to the side, a couple of people being crucified at the edge of the amphitheatre.
Yeah, or perhaps just speeding it up and livening it up a bit. So you might have individuals attached to a cross, but then you might...
release a lion.
Exactly, exactly.
Sorry, that was a bit sudden there.
Precisely.
That wasn't the cue for a lion to be released. So.
And that would make it faster and much more interesting and add an element of surprise and
so while you're relaxing there under your awning, there's actually... something a bit
there's
dynamic
some action going
on. Yeah.
Yeah, there's some action going on in the arena. So it might have involved a combination of crucifixion and execution by wild animals. Mm-hmm. And we know that certainly later on the death by wild animal thing was common. You'd just get tied to a stake, wheeled in and chewed to bits by some hungry animals. Or possibly a bit of torture as well. Or maybe even burning. For example, we hear in Tacitus, in his annals, Nero, after the great fire of Rome, tries to make the Christians the scapegoats for this event. He executes a whole lot of them, and that's partly by being killed by wild beasts, but also a combination of crucifixion and burning alive, apparently as a form of illumination. Mm-hmm. It was getting dark. There were sort of human lamps, human torches.
Very theatrical of him. I realise this isn't going to be a happy answer, but what is the process of actually dying by crucifixion? What does somebody go through when they're being punished this way?
Well, it's actually quite a complex process, and some quite serious studies have been done of this. You've got an individual who's probably been tortured in some way. So you've already got an individual in a state of shock, perhaps loss of blood. They're then attached to the cross. And that can be by being bound to the cross, or it can be by being nailed to the cross. Now, in a lot, particularly of Christian imagery, the nails are seen going through the hands. That doesn't work in practice. The hands just will simply rip through. You can't support the body.
Through the body.
Hands.
Yeah.
Exactly. They'll simply rip off. So the only way to do it really is to put the nail through the arm, and it seems to go through the wrist.
Yeah.
And in fact, the ossuary in Jerusalem, where the bones were analysed, shows some scratches on the arm bones that might have been caused by a nail being driven past the bone.
Yeah.
There may or may not be some extra support to prolong the process, whether that's a block under the feet perhaps, or this sedilia or this corner, this peg that might have been sharp, to prop the body up a bit.
Mm.
But essentially, if you've got your arms outstretched, you get the chest and the lungs overextended. And that combined with the whole weight of the body being supported by these outstretched arms makes it extremely difficult to breathe. And in order to take a decent breath, the victim's kind of got to almost haul themselves up.
Yeah.
And they can do that up to a point, but then eventually will become completely exhausted.
Yeah.
And then will die of asphyxiation. But nevertheless, this is a process that can take hours. And of course, there are, even today, around Easter celebrations, individuals who will voluntarily be crucified.
Yeah.
For a short period of time, not up until death. I think sometimes even the nails do get...
Really?
Or some, perhaps through the hands, or some form of actual torture and blood. But you can survive for some time.
Mm.
It's still a prolonged and horrible death.
So being exposed to the elements, part of that would be stripped naked, and the punishment of being put on display would come into that as well, I guess.
Yes, absolute humiliation. The individual is naked, exposed to the elements. They've been tortured. There's dehydration, there's injury, there might be sepsis infection already setting in, probably scavenger birds waiting to be able to descend.
So we've mentioned Spartacus and the slaves, but what other historical accounts do we have of crucifixion being applied?
We have some quite conspicuous examples. One is during the Jewish Wars. Josephus gives the account of Titus crucifying huge numbers of Jews in an effort to make them surrender. And actually, we get an interesting note also from Josephus, because he says he saw many of the captives crucified and he knew three of them. And he apparently went to Titus, the emperor, and asked for clemency. And Titus apparently did command them to be taken down, and they were still alive. Josephus goes on to say two of them died under the physician's hands while a third recovered, which is a really interesting case of survival of crucifixion. And of course, the example we always think about when we think of crucifixion is the crucifixion of Jesus Christ under the orders of the then governor of the province of Judea, Marcus Pontius Pilatus. There, our main source is, of course, the Gospels. We have to be careful how we use the Gospels as a historical text, as we do with any type of ancient text. And the historicity is debated in this regard. But the impression we get is that Pontius Pilatus was reluctant to crucify Jesus Christ. And of course, the crowd was offered the choice, Christ or Barabbas, and chose Jesus Christ. Now, it's important, I think, to contextualize this form of punishment. It's not a specifically Christian thing. Crucifixion has been going on for a very long time before and would continue for a very long time afterwards. So, grisly as it is, this was, in fact, a standard form of punishment that was being applied to Jesus Christ. And in the accounts of the Gospels, we see things that we recognize from other ancient sources. So the scourging, for example, the ritual humiliation with the crown of thorns, the titulus with the name and supposed crime.
The carrying and being paraded of your own cross. And
exactly. The being guarded on the cross. The Gospel of John mentions the two thieves crucified on either side of Christ asked for their legs to be broken so they wouldn't still be up on the cross on the Sabbath. And that was carried out. And John also says that the soldiers realized Jesus was already dead, so they didn't break his legs. So we get those sorts of details that might give us some insight into processes there.
Okay. So what was the perception that they had of this in classical texts? These are being written by refined elite gentlemen, and they are thinking about it a particular way, and they are also perceiving the people who are punished by this in a particular way. So how are they writing about it?
Well, an interesting case there is provided by Cicero, actually, in the Varrae Narrations. This is the set of prosecution speeches against Verres, who is the governor of Sicily, and he's been accused of all sorts of forms of corruption. One of the accusations that Cicero makes against Verres is that he tortured and crucified a Roman citizen.
Oh.
Yeah, really, really bad. Cicero says of crucifixion, he says, a most cruel and disgusting punishment. The very mention of the cross should be far removed, not only from a Roman citizen's body, but from his mind, his eyes, his ears. So there is a realization there that it is cruel and appalling. But we have to contextualize this. The point that Cicero is really making is that Verres has done this to a Roman citizen.
Yeah.
That is the point he keeps hammering. It's not that he's crucified somebody. It's he's crucified a Roman citizen, and he's tortured this individual as well. Now, the individual in question is one Publius Gavius of Cosa, and Verres has accused him of being a spy for the fugitive slave army of Spartacus during the Third Servile War. So there's another crucifixion connection there, I suppose. But the account that Cicero gives us is that Publius Gavius repeatedly said, I am a Roman citizen, I am a Roman citizen. And this was ignored, and this punishment was still carried out. Verres even had the audacity to crucify Gavius in a position where he could see from Messina across the Straits of Messina to Italy. So the visual image there is of this Roman citizen attached to this cross, looking across the water to Italy, where this thing could never happen. But he is separated from Italy by the Straits of Messina, and instead he is in the Sicily of Verres, where this thing can happen.
Okay.
So it's quite a powerful image. But I think that's important. Cicero expresses this disgust, this comprehension, this most appalling, cruel form of punishment. But he's stressing that in the context of this was done to a Roman citizen.
We also have a decent passage by Seneca, who is one of those people who likes thinking big thoughts about everything impossible. What does Seneca moralise to us? It's from his moral letters, so yeah, there we go.
Well, Seneca, I guess, really spells it out to us.
Yeah.
That it's, he says, is there such a thing as a person who would actually prefer wasting away in pain on a cross, dying limb by limb, one drop of blood at a time, rather than dying quickly? Well, the answer is no. It is an appalling way to go. He says, would any human being willingly choose to be fastened to that cursed tree, especially after the beating that had left him deathly weak? So there's that reference to the scourging process. Again, it's a bit of a side reference, but it's there. Deformed and swelling with vicious welts on shoulders and chest, and struggling to draw every last agonizing breath. Anyone facing such a death would plead to die rather than mount the cross. Now, again, he's spelling it out perhaps as some sort of deterrent, but he's in the cushy position.
Mm.
This form of punishment isn't going to be applied to him. It is applied to the lower classes, to the slaves. So I suppose we can read into that some sense that this is an awful, awful way to die.
Yeah, but it's easy to write about when you're removed from it, I guess.
Yes, yeah.
So we've discussed what the sources tell us and what we've discovered archaeologically, but there's also bits of pieces of graffiti, isn't there, that show crucifixion or at least give a bit of a sense of it?
Yes, we've got a couple of really interesting but also quite enigmatic cases of graffiti that show some form of crucifixion. One of them, then this is in fact our oldest image, it perhaps dates to maybe the earlier 2nd century CE, is a bit of a wall which is actually covered in graffiti that was found in a taberna, a tavern or a shop, in Puteoli, modern Pozzuoli, the same place where the Lex Puteolana comes from that spells out all the regulations for burial and funerals and executions and things.
Yeah.
It is one of our very rare illustrations of a crucifixion, and it shows an individual stretched out on a cross with bent legs. Now, that's quite interesting because our archaeological evidence from Jerusalem also indicates that the legs were bent, flexed as part of this process. It's a rather crude drawing, but arguably this individual has got a peg between their legs as well.
Mm.
So we could have that extra form of torture in there. But a really interesting detail is just on the left-hand side between the head and the shoulder of the figure, there is an inscription which says Alcimila, a woman's name.
Oh, wow.
This inscription appears to be fairly carefully positioned. It would be interesting to think it is actually referring to that image of the crucified figure. It would be another rare piece of evidence for the crucifixion of a woman, possibly a female slave. Although Alcimila is not necessarily a slave's name.
Mm.
Now, the whole wall is covered in graffiti, so it might be unrelated, but it could be referring to some recent crucifixion, possibly even one that took place in the amphitheatre of Puteoli, which was just up the road.
Okay, and there's one more that we've got, which is quite a bit later.
Yes, this one is maybe a century later. And it's known as the Alexamenos Graffito. And this one was found in Rome in the Domus Gelotiana, which is a building on the Palatine Hill that was sealed off when it was kind of cut off and filled in to be used to support other buildings
okay.
above it.
Yep.
It's not entirely clear what this structure was, but it might have been a paedagogium, which was a sort of boarding school for training up boys for service in the imperial household.
Mm.
Now, this image shows a man with a hand raised, a sort of a salute-like gesture, maybe it's a gesture of worship, standing beneath a figure on a cross, and the figure on the cross appears human apart from the fact it's got a donkey's head.
Right.
And there is an inscription that is in Greek. It reads as Alexamenos worships, it could be a god, or worships his god. This is usually taken to be mocking an individual called Alexamenos for his worship of Christ. So in other words, this is mocking a Christian.
So is this the earliest depiction of Jesus's crucifixion?
It's possible. We can't be entirely sure, because it could be a figure that's not Christ but is crucified that has some connection with Alexamenos, or it's really a bit hard to work it out. Interestingly, though, in the next room in Latin, there is another inscription written by somebody different that says Alexamenos Fidelis, Alexamenos the faithful, or Alexamenos is faithful.
Mm.
So that's intriguing. We think, oh, is this Alexamenos' kind of retort to the wise guy who did the inscription and the graffito in the other room? But we can't be absolutely certain.
Why the donkey head?
Well, that would be a form of insult.
Okay.
As was the idea that a god could be crucified.
Mm.
This is not a godlike end. So you have this undignified death. And again, I guess if we think back to the Gospels, one of the sort of taunts of Jesus while he was on the cross was, well, if you're the Son of God, why don't you just rescue yourself?
Where's your God now?
Where's your God now? Yeah. So that could be part of the mockery in this image as well. And then you've got just the donkey head as an insult as well.
Okay. I feel like that if we were in the Roman world today, we would have seen a crucifixion. We would have seen more than one. Just, you know, on our travels, on a day out, we would have seen this as a form of punishment. So when did it become unfashionable, and when did the Romans stop practicing it? Or was it a until the end of empire kind of thing?
Well, officially, crucifixion in the form we think of it, that idea of an individual attached to a cross, that was formally abolished in 337 CE by the Emperor Constantine, who was, of course, the first Christian emperor. And the idea behind that seems to have been that no ordinary mortal should die in that way. That was the death associated with Christ. And so to die in exactly the same way was some sort of totally inappropriate imitation.
So it's not that it was cruel or unusual, or that, you know, nobody should have to go through that. It was more so this is too associated with our religion now.
Exactly. That version became just too charged with meaning.
Yeah.
So that specific version was abolished. But, you know, you could do a variation on the theme that was near enough.
That was Dr. Gillian Shepherd, director of the Trendle Centre at La Trobe University, and you have been listening to Emperors of Rome. If you like this podcast, you can subscribe in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you may cast your pod. Please leave a review there. They are always very appreciated. You can like the Emperors of Rome on Facebook, and you can follow both of us on Twitter. Gillian is at Lady Trendle. I am at Nightlight Guy, and the podcast is at Rome Podcast. That's it today for Emperors of Rome. So until the next episode, I'm Matt Smith. You've been fantastic, and thanks for listening.
Ugh.
Yes.
Okay.
Horrible.
That was a fun hour. Thank you.
Oh, God.